Let's try this again. Welcome to another amazing, fantastic, incredible, phenomenal episode of everybody's favorite ATT Confidential. I'm Brayden.
I'm Tan.
I have absolute meltdown trying to record this a couple hours ago. I almost called an audible on this one because it's so fucking good. It's so good. It's such an amazing cryptid. I can't believe the Von Meter monster isn't on the same level of as like Mothman.
I would agree. This is very the digging into this case. The Van Meter monster that I have that we're talking about today is a cryptid that has. I think it's actually taken flight, I suppose, and garnered more interest in the last couple of years. I hadn't really heard about it until at least probably mid last year, and then I've kind of finally found it. I guess it's been gaining popularity, I suppose. It's got its own festival, just like the Mothman. It has.
And what did you call it? What did you call it?
I suppose you could call it America's first kaiju. We call it an American kaiju, essentially.
Yeah, man. We're like, why didn't they call it Lamphead or something? Fucking, like, I mean, the Von Meter monster, sure, it's good. But, like, I'm going to say right now, he deserves it. She, whatever this thing is, deserves to have its own, like, unique name.
Really. Not named after kind of a boring town-ish, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, whoa. Boring town? What we're about to tell you. You know, would say this is, in fact, quite possibly one of the most interesting towns.
Yeah, well, for several days, I suppose. It was a pretty interesting town. Our story takes place in 1903, beginning of the century, what most people would describe, not us, but normally, on average, it was described as a quiet town of Van Meter, Iowa. The place around this time had a bustling population of 400. So
yeah, everybody, a place that big without a few people, everyone knows each
other's business. Absolute metropolis.
You know what everyone's up to. You probably thrive on the gossip of the small town of just like, oh yeah, did you hear what the farmer's daughter did? Spreading like wildfire in there.
In the later part of the year, around September 29th, a farm implement salesman by the name of UJ Griffith was actually returning from his rounds of being a farm implement salesman, I suppose, visiting everybody, making sure all your farm tools are holding up. I guess that's what you do.
Yeah.
And he was reported to have seen something quite odd that you wouldn't normally see. Griffith reported seeing some type of light burning on the top of a two-story Mather and Greg's building on Main Street. Now, this is, again, 1903. You're not used to seeing bright light.
And this is late at night, right? This is like getting into the... Is it past midnight yet? Or is it just prior? It's late enough that Mr. Griffith, probably pulls out his pocket watch and he goes, now, who would be doing some tomfoolery at this hour? Obviously, it's ne'er-do-wells. And no one should be out. Any reputable person should not be out at this hour.
And everybody in Iowa in the 1900s sounded like a southern dandy.
I must do my civil duty, not call the police, but investigate this matter myself.
Maybe Mr. Griffith was an immigrant from the deep south, I suppose. It's not said exactly.
Were you there, Dan? Were you there? So you don't know how
I was busy that day. But the other more stranger part of the story is that when Griffith approached this light to get a better look at what it was, I mean, it could have been anything at that point. You'd probably think the place was on fire if you were back then. That would probably be a logical a step in your thinking process to be like, this place is on fire. I need to go check it out. What's making this light? He said that the light actually jumped across the street, so the entire main street, on top of another building across the street. So, I mean, this is Main Street. So you're talking about a probably like at least 20, 30 feet.
Yeah, I would say that's, yeah, it's a big enough leap. And he's in there before the leap. He's like, "You, sir, up there, good sir, you best come down right now. You shan't be up there." And it's just, boom, this thing explodes to the other rooftop.
And then as he approached,
I never.
So as he approached the spot where the light had relocated to, the light suddenly vanished, gone from sight, disappeared. All right. So Griffith went on to, kind of talk about this as his experience. Is kind of, this is strange enough that, there's 400 people, probably 272 of them probably knew about this event by the next day.
The next day. Yeah. It's like, well, it's like Mr. Griffith was like, by accounts, a stand-up guy and stuff, and not want to, tell tall tales. So like, it's going, like, he saw this light leap from one side to the other, right? They're like, right? So obviously speculation's going wild that, like, what the hell's going on here?
So the very next night, just before 12:27 a.m., the local town doctor, Dr. Alcott, apparently was awoken from sleep in the back room of his office where he would stay sometimes, which is in the downtown area of Van Meter. So you're still in the same kind of general area. And he said that there was a bright light shining through his window.
And we're talking some fucking lumens before we had real lumen technology.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this is like this is candlelight era. they don't have, they're not rocking like, you know what I mean? Like these LED lights, but that's what's coming through his window. It's like startling how bright he's like, what the hell? By God, what is this? What in tarnation is this light?
And even perhaps just if we're going to like compensate for what the relative term for bright light would be back then, even if they were like, okay, it was just a really bright candle or something like that, it's still bright enough that it's coming through your window to wake you up. That's bright. Like
And we'll get into it later, but it's bright enough to cast a beam.
And so apparently Dr. Alcott, his first instinct is to go ahead and grab the gun. as I guess most people in 1903, he thought it was, perhaps these were people looking to rob
ne'er-do-wells.
I think that was kind of the general consensus of what was going on right now, because everybody was kind of on edge about this light that was jumping around downtown. And probably if it wasn't fire and it was moving, it was very well possible that there was burglars or, robbers skulking around the town at night looking for
something
places.
Something was being burgled.
There was some burgling going on, and it wasn't hamburgers. This is what he probably thought. So he grabbed his gun to ward off these would-be invaders, possibly. And as he got outside, he was dumbfounded by what he saw. And what he described was some sort of half-human, half-animal creature with bat-like wings and a single horn-like appendage in the middle of its head. And from that horn, that's where this light was emanating from. Now,
it's terrifying.
So it's terrifying.
It's terrifying at night. Because just like, let's look at that description of the creature. And one thing that I like couldn't get past that would give me chills is I was like, if this thing was stalking you at night, if it's something that stalks around the night, the worst part about it is, and to me, it's like, I don't know if it's better you knowing or better you don't. But I think in the sense of if you were hiding from this thing in the dark, you're like, oh God, you know where it's looking. So it's like, you know what I mean? Because it's got a flashlight. So it's like, as soon as the light's on you, you're like, does it see me? You're like, it's obviously, it's like so bright right on. You're like, fuck, it's looking right at me. Like, that is such a terrifying thought of like, I was like, God, how have they not made like a monster movie about this with this kind of thing? Because it's like, that light source, when it would be emanating, it's like, its gaze is affixed on you. You know it's looking at you. Like, if you're seeing the light, you're like, shit, I'm illuminated.
And
I'm not hiding anymore. It's like you're hiding in the bushes. the bushes light up, you're like, oh, I'm fucked. Yeah, I'm dead.
And it probably makes it all the more terrifying when you try to put yourself in the position of Dr. Alcott, where he's a doctor. Okay. He's a doctor. He's a man of science. And you're there, like society back then wasn't as steeped as it is today. And like complete, we have cryptids, we've got monsters, we've got movie monsters, we got everything. You know, sometimes when you're looking out your window at night, you have to expect to see Freddy Krueger or, you know, whatever the creature from the Black Lagoon. But these monsters were not as ingrained in our psyches as they are now. So going outside, Dr. Alcott probably had the assumption that this light that was coming through his window, if you're just looking at the window and there's a powerful light coming through, you wouldn't be able to see anything. You would just be able to see the light and you wouldn't be able to see the shadow behind it or what's holding it, anything like that. So he assumes that when he comes outside and he rounds the corner of his office, that he's going to be laying eyes, like his brain is set and prepared to be laying eyes on some, you know, a pair of or several people, you know, just men probably being out there. You know, may or may not have guns, who knows? But that's what he's expecting to see. And to turn that corner, to wheel that corner, and you've got your gun out, and you look at something that is completely inhuman, something that is completely unexpected. I can't imagine the absolute fear, the pure, undiluted fear that you would feel from something that is completely unexpected and something that you have no idea what it is. You see these giant... this giant thing, you know, looking at you.
Well, I mean, like, I'm sure some of the various accounts of it, like standing, like absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. So
terrifying. Like you come around the corner, you're like, you'd be like, oh, I'm dead. Like,
you have no idea what it is. So he turns around the corner and yes, of course he is frozen in fear for several moments about seeing what he is, but you know, instincts come out and he just, fucking starts blasting.
Well, I mean, that's a good.
It probably took him a good few seconds to remember he actually had a gun in his hand. Like I would probably be like, I would, you know, if you're not forgetting that you like, oh, I've got a gun. Use that. So
yeah, now start shooting.
So Alcott managed to get off 5 rounds, directly, like, you know, almost like point blank. I would say not, you know, coming right around the corner at this creature, and to his shock, the creature didn't react at all. Didn't seem these bullets.
Distraught. It didn't seem angry. It didn't, just indifferent.
Yeah. Completely nothing to this creature. So the creature has no effect. It's not staggered at all. It doesn't seem anything in it. And since that seems to be the case, Alcott, you know, being a smart man, runs. He ran. Yeah, he fled. Yeah. Took off, which is probably, you know, would be the smart idea at that point. And the creature didn't seem to pursue him and he got away. And the creature, again, vanished into the night, as far as we know. So now this is the next night. So 2 nights, like I said, there was probably 272 people who knew about it after the first night. Now probably the entire town, the entire 400 after the second night. It's on average. I'm spitballing here. Numbers, right?
Yeah.
Average per rate, average per hour, how much faster rumor spreads, I suppose. But after 2 days, the entire town knows that there is something prowling around at night and nobody seems to know what it is. And I still believe that the general consensus is that this is just some pranksters. Like this is still that is still probably what most people think.
Well, I mean, and that's fair to say, because you're like, you hear one person seeing a light, and then you would think, like, honestly, as a person, like a reasonable person, if you hear one night, you're like, oh yeah, so and so saw a light jump the other day, and then someone comes to you like, yeah, you remember that light from last night? Well, the doctor saw it, and it was a winged beast with a horned forehead. You'd be like, all right. Like, you'd be like, All right. Okay.
Yeah. At this point, you're like, you're going to tell me that there's a goddamn kaiju on the loose. You tell me that Rodan or Varan the Unbelievable, that wasn't Varan. Varan's like a flying iguana. It's like, he said it was more like one of them pteranodactyls, like Giles. You think that was Giles? No, that would have been Rodan. It's like, no, it's not Rodan. Rodan doesn't have a light coming off of the top of his head. Giles shoots a laser beam at the front of his head. It's like, well, it could have been Fire Rodan from Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla 2. Oh, that's a good point.
He had a goddamn illumination coming from his forehead.
It's, and Fire Rodan shoots a beam out of his mouth. He's illuminated. It could be one of them. It's like, but Giles shoots, has an actual laser beam that comes out of his head.
The problem with them is both of them are susceptible to gunfire. And this thing was not.
Well, that's not true. I've seen Rodan take multiple missiles, and it's probably, his skin is probably narrow and impenetrable to conventional firearms. Like, I would think that wouldn't, the bullets wouldn't affect him that much. He was born in a volcano. So I'm sure the conversation went something like that.
Probably.
That's as accurate as we can get. And so October 2nd. Just a few, you know, the very next night, this is the third night of the Terror of Van Meter. You had a local hardware store owner named O.V. White, who was asleep in his room over the hardware store. Since I imagine most of the people who own shops were worried about what was going on. So they're kind of all on edge and probably sleeping in their area.
It's probably because, like, you're buying real estate, you're building a house. So if you're a shop owner, I don't think it was probably uncommon for you to reside above.
Right. I like most of them had, you know, of course we didn't have zoning laws back then. So you could put a bedroom or something up above your shop. And but also I think just for an extra precaution, I think a lot of them were actually, a lot of these shop owners were sleeping, if not on top, near their shops. Not in their shops, like right above their shops, I'm sure.
Well, you're getting reports of gunfire and people jump, so you're like, the last thing you want is to get robbed.
Right. So,
or ransacked or something.
The story as he tells it was that he was awakened by a strange metallic rasping sound. And then...
He looks outside and he goes, he like scans the street and he's like, well, no, nothing weird here. Just one street light is on. And then he goes to shut the blinds. He goes, wait a minute. Street lights don't exist.
Wait a minute. We don't have those.
We don't have those yet. Those don't come into creation for another 20, 30 years. What the hell's over there?
I think they had light. Well, when did the street light come into existence? Well, I'm sure they probably...
I don't know. They didn't have it in 1903.
Well, they had telephones. They had telephones because apparently when he, you know, perhaps his gaze tracked upwards towards the top of one of the telephone poles near his shop on Main Street there, or on the street, he saw the Van Meter monster. He saw this creature perched on the crossbeam, just sitting there, perched there like, you know, some kind of bat or, bird creature. As you would imagine, probably hunched over, gripping on with its bottom feet and its forefeet.
You're telling me you slept 8 hours straight last night?
Didn't wake up once. First time in like 8 years.
All right. What are these things?
They're called Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies from Mood.com.
So you just get high and go to sleep? THC has always made me weird, Nancy.
That's what I thought too. But it's not just THC, it's CBD and CBN too.
And it actually knocks you out?
Not like a pill where you feel drugged. It's more like your brain finally shuts up.
Wow. Nice. But what about the morning? Foggy, fuzzy, tired?
That's the thing. No grogginess. I wake up and I'm just awake.
And it's legal though?
100%. Totally federally legal, like 2018 Farm Bill legal.
Where do people get these?
Just search Sleepy Time Gummies on Mood.com and use the code ALIEN to get 20% off your first order.
Yeah, I need to try this. And if it doesn't work for me, can I get my money back?
Absolutely. They give you 100 days to try all their stuff.
Okay, I'm ordering these right now.
Do it and report back, good buddy.
Now, White was known around town or had the reputation of being a kind of marksman, of being one of the better shots.
Crack shot.
From the town. And so he's not a stranger to to taking aim and shooting. So, you know, he gathers his wits around him, whatever this thing is, he's looking at it, but he knows that he's got his gun and that he can shoot this. So, you know, he's probably hoping, you know, taking the predator approach, like if it bleeds, we can kill it. And so Ovi-White raised his gun and he took aim and fired at the creature, you know, put it between his sights and pulled the trigger. And the very next instant, it is said that he was immersed in the glaring light, like the
terrifying,
like this light that it
probably, like, can you imagine, you see a light on the ground and then you shoot this thing and it's just like, now you're like, oh shit. You're like, it's 100% like affixed to you. Like, that's the terrifying thing about this monster.
And then in addition to this glaring light, it said that Ovi-White experienced a kind of odor, like permeating into his room, like in through the window, and kind of just probably suffusing the area that he was in. And it knocked him out. Like he was rendered unconscious by this powerful odor, you know, and he lost consciousness and then was unable to remember until he woke up and the creature was gone.
It's like a fart light.
And so you'd think that would be maybe that's three people, but actually another person saw this sequence of events unfold. So the shots actually awoke White's neighbor, Sidney Gregg. Now, Sidney Gregg was able to open his front door and come outside to kind of see what was going on. And as when he looked outside onto Main Street, he saw the monster perched on the telephone pole as well. So he corroborated White's story and looking out there. Corroborated on White's sighting of this creature, and he saw it there too. And after White lost consciousness, Gregg was able to watch as this monster actually came down the pole and observed its behavior as it descended. And what he described is that the movement of this creature seemed to resemble a parrot, in the sense that when it came down the pole, it was using its beak as a kind of appendage, right?
Yeah, it's such a good description, because I think everyone, when as soon as you say like a parrot, you go, okay, like he grabbed and slide down, grab.
Right, so he's
down.
Using like, his mouth kind of like to grip onto yeah. things. Like it seemed to be using its jaws to kind of, its beak appendage to kind of, yeah, to descend down this pole as it went down. And then when it, you know, and he got a closer look at it once it got on the ground, he was saying that he described this thing to be at least 8 feet tall. It had a bird, a beak like a bird. And then it had these bat-like wings. So when people say bat-like, I'm sure what they kind of mean is like not exactly, they're just not feathered, right? So it could be something yeah. like a pterodactyl where it's leather, or, you know, a lizard or something like that, where it's just leathery. It's just skin spread out between
yeah, pulled tight.
You know, digits or whatever, the bone structures that this creature has. And so apparently like around this time that the creature that Gregg was observing the monster, it said that the usual mail train came through the town. So, you know, I mean, you're thinking like Wild West town, you know, there's the train just kind of running close by. So with this seemed to startle the creature. From Gregg's description, and this thing crouched, trying to get ready to spring. But instead of trying to take flight, it seemed to kind of flap its wings and kind of hop away like a kangaroo. So
so fucking weird.
I imagine it. Like to me, it, you know, as a kid and being into dinosaurs and things, it reminds me. Of kind of like watching a movie and kind of how, or watching like a dinosaur episode and then kind of illustrating how maybe, because we don't know for sure, but like how a pterodactyl would probably take flight. Because we're not 100% sure, like were they gliders? Did they come up off the ground? Did they start like galloping maybe? Like they start galloping to gather up speed. And as they get that, they spread their wings out. Like this is what I'm thinking in my head that this man is seeing, like going down Main Street, right?
Yeah.
But he said, you know, he said it moved along on all.
You just do the hard eye wipe. Yeah.
He said it was like moving along on all four legs. So I mean, to me, that sounds very much like how you see, or how modern day, like in movies and stuff, we represent the movement of some pterodactyls and those flying lizards. That's that they got like enough. They've got enough. Like they're not like bats, but bats kind of like crawl. They can't like move around and like they don't really kind of move around. They can climb, mm-hmm. but they don't kind of like gallop. But I would think like the pterodactyls, that some of them are like more. They're kind of comfortable on the ground as well. And like this thing is like moving. And that's how it's kind of galloping along the ground. That's what I imagine in my head. But it spread out its wings as it gathered enough speed, it seemed to, and took flight. And he described it sailing away off into the night. Now, Van Meter, you know, even though it was 400, Van Meter was a town, I guess you could say it was in a bit of a decline. Van Meter had originally, in decades past, had been a mining town. It had been a coal mining town. And so around 1903, like, it still had some mines active, but they weren't producing as much as they had been. But some of the miners that still remained, apparently from one of the mine shafts in the town, the 2 days after the event of October 1st, what we described, the Van Meter monster taking off, you know, Greg and White's encounter, you had miners from the town actually reporting that they had been hearing these noises noises which they couldn't identify coming from their mine in the recent days. At least one of the person, the mine director, J.L. Platt Jr., described these sounds. And this was a kind of quote from taken from a local newspaper at the time after the events, saying that as though Satan and a regiment of imps were coming forth for battle. That's the description that you get.
It's fucking terrifying. No, it's like this is getting reported out. So you have the sightings. The town, by all accounts, is spooked. And now you have miners and mine directors being like, there's something in one of the abandoned mine shafts that's fucking making terrible noises. Right? So they're like the town, like the police and the law enforcement are like, well, that's gotta be the thing, right? So they're like, okay, well, here's what we'll do. They're like, you know what? Well, let's post some men outside, some armed men, right? And just keep watch. Let us know if it comes out. Like, that's what we want to know. So they post up in the night. And it's like half an hour, 45 minutes go by, right? And they're all back. They're all like, no, there's two of them. The two things came out of the fucking mine. There's two of them. And the cops and everything are like, what? And it's like, yeah, like all these armed men are freaking out. They'll be like, two of these things came flying out of the fucking mine. We're like, I'm not trained. I'm not qualified for this.
Yeah. And apparently, like, as they observed, there were two creatures they described. And there was one that was seemed smaller than the first one. And these ones had been like coming out of the emerging and taking flight during the night from a specific mine entrance. So Platt, the mine director, gathered up a group of men, and they all, you know, brought all of their guns, shotguns, everything that they had, pretty much, and you know, armed to the teeth, and then took watch outside this specific mine thing. And then it said that in the early hours of the morning, probably just before dawn, these creatures reappeared, and the men just let loose. You know, it was by most accounts, it was a very loud encounter. It was a very long and prolonged facade that they gave it. Like they went at it. They gave her a go. They just emptied everything at these creatures. Sustained fire. So these, as the creatures kind of reappeared, they had all this. Apparently, the creatures did a repeat performance of what they had done when Greg had shot at him. Was it White? No, sorry, White. When White had fired his shots, these creatures let out some type of cry. They said it sounded kind of a strange rasping cry, and then right, very much. Yeah, if you look, Rodan, Gaios, look up those ones. I just mentioned it's something like that, and then the. They released the miners reported smelling that these noxious odors, and then these creatures disappeared. They flew back into the mine shaft where they had emerged from originally. And once they got inside, and they didn't reemerge for for a few minutes, as I'm sure all the miners were pretty much nonplussed. We're like, what do we do? What do we do? And they were like, well, what can we do? Board it up. Board it up.
We're fucking barricaded. Yeah. not only did they barricade it, but like one of the reports that I read is that they barricade it and the mayor is like, blow it up. Blow up the entrance. And that's what they did. They fucking dynamited the entrance. They're just like, take it down. Like, we don't, whatever these things are, we're not fighting them. Bury him.
Yeah.
And so they boarded up and then blew up the fucking opening to the mine.
Yeah, and that thing was pretty much lost to time. Like even today, I guess you could say there was a formal investigation as far as that goes by the on the TV show Expedition X. They had a more recent investigation of the Van Meter monster, and they went to the actual site, the property where that mine shaft would have been located today, and they said like the owner gave them permission to go on there, and they said that they had probably located where it was, and there's like nothing left. Like, I mean, because you can't leave mine shafts just all open and all these giant holes running around. You know, most of them get filled in, sealed, yeah, whatever. Otherwise, they'd be a huge safety hazard. But this place, they said like there was maybe just like from like the descriptions that they had gotten, gleaned from history books and reports about the event, they found what was probably within good reason that this was the place. And it's just a depression in the earth. It's just like, it's not even a hole. It's just like a ditch.
Depression where they would have, where the caves would have collapsed, the mine shafts would have collapsed.
Yeah. And, so it didn't seem to have been disturbed at all. So if these creatures, at least from there, had been emerging, I don't think they'd be coming out from there.
They're not coming out. They're buried. But that kind of begs the question though. Do you think, cause I was debating this cause, you know, is this one of those things where, if this monster sighting is to be believed that they're there, did they emerge from the mine shafts, or were these things, maybe they're migratory, right? And they were using the cave as a home. Like they found the cave.
Temporary
the
breeding mine ground. Shafts.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, so what do you think about that? Because like originally when I was looking at it, I was like, they dug too deep and something came up. And then I was kind of like, well, maybe, or something stumbled upon the mine shaft.
Right. A little bit deeper. They would have hit Balrog territory and then they would have really been screwed. But it's an interesting thing because it's like we mentioned Mothman before. One of the more mundane explanations about Mothman is probably the misidentification of some type of bird, right? It could have been a whooping crane or something like that, these large birds. Some of the encounters, I could probably go with that. There was a eyewitness account in the area by one. These guys were also interviewed by Expedition X. Joey Perales and Tia Stauffer apparently were two residents that had an eyewitness encounter with something in the area at Terry Trueblood Park out there. And they said that they saw some type of creature. Like that, it was near it, when looking at the park itself, like the way it's the terrain and everything. There's like a tiny little pond or lake, and there's long grass. What they described, that there was long grass like surrounding the whole area, which I assume that's where for them, for this account, I could be like, well, this could very well might be a bird at night. Like they said that they were out there. You know, they were going to go stargazing. It's like, I don't believe you weren't going out there stargazing. You're going to, okay. Yeah,
no chance.
We know what you were doing. Who else goes out in the middle of the night to a nice scenic park to go gaze at the stars, whatever. Yeah. Anyways, but when they wandered, but also they didn't take the advice from Jurassic Park 2. They went into the long grass, and you don't go into the long grass.
Everybody knows that. If you see long grass and you don't hear this voice in the back of your head, don't go into the long grass. Educate yourself. Yeah. Quite easy.
it'll save your life. I guarantee.
Yeah.
So the when they were going in there, you know, they reported encountering some type of winged creature. This winged creature that kind of came upon them. I'm like, well, it could have been a bird trying to defend. You know, it could have been a crane. Could have been something, a heron or something trying to defend its nest, I suppose. You know, as you just kind of stumbled into it, I said, you know. So that's one of the explanations that kind of comes out. But even that, I was like, a whole town being like, we saw the same thing, especially these Mayan, like,
so many people saw this thing.
An 8 foot tall, like even a whooping.
Even if you say that, okay, that's not accurate. It's maybe an exaggeration. Even like an exaggeration, like, okay, so maybe it was 6 feet. That's still fucking humongous for a bird.
Still giant. And then they're talking about its motion and stuff like you know, herons and cranes, like they don't like use their beaks to kind of like crawl down stuff like this way.
No, it's such a unique description.
So there's one that for me, that explanation kind of falls by the wayside, being like, okay, what the heck? Like, I don't know. Like, it couldn't have been something like that. Like I mentioned before, if I were going to be like, you know, what it sounds like, the shining light aside, it is to me, and especially in the artistic renditions that you see of these creatures from the descriptions, it sounds like a pterodactyl. Sounds like some prehistoric creature.
With some weird future technology, with a laser beam.
With a light on its head for some reason. Yeah, it's with freaking laser beams. Pterodactyl with freaking laser beams on its head. One of the things we kind of left out from one of the descriptions is that during one of the times when the I think it was with Dr. Alcott's encounter, is that he said that that light seemed to have some type of, like, it was so bright that it was like there was a point where it was like it seemed to be scanning the room, like it kind of moved from side to side or something like that.
It's some sort of like robotic, like AI, right? Like if some alien AI, right? Because that's like when you see the scan, like it's, if it's like scanning the room, getting a 3D image of it, like that.
Some kind of,
it's a weird description.
Bioengineered cyber pterodactyl with the a scanner array attached on its head. I mean, that sounds accurate from the descriptions, like from what we got from the lore here. One of the other ones was that there are stories of, you know, large, unusual flying creatures from all across the United States, in North America, you know, South America to some extent, about these creatures. You know, when you think of large reptilian flying creatures, kind of first thing that comes to your head is Rodan. For me, Rodan, but most people, it's probably dragons. Probably dragons, which is something that had been reported, like even in like the 1800s, like late 1800s and stuff, like 1860s and stuff. There were like rashes of sightings, at least in news or newspaper stories, about people seeing things like flying crocodiles, or that's how they described it, at least, or flying lizards or something that were, outside some of these towns, like in Arizona.
Flying crocodiles would be fucking terrifying.
I mean, yeah, they're already bad. And you're like, you want one flying around? Like I saw a picture, I saw a video of crocodiles galloping, which I knew they could do, but just watching one just like fucking go at it, and it's terrifying. I'm like, why are they? This is why these things have survived for so long. It's why they outlasted dinosaurs.
Yeah, they're surprisingly
perfect.
Fast.
You can't kill the perfect killing machine. Jesus.
Yeah,
you just give them wings. Fuck. So there's something like that, but you know, was it something? This was like a leftover relic, a dragon era thing. It's the light, you know, the light on top of the head, which is something that it wasn't breathing so fire. Strange. It wasn't something that was destructive. It just seemed something that kind of illuminated whatever this creature was looking at.
Which is, again, terrifying, because I was thinking, I was like, what's worse if you saw something in the dark and you're like, does that thing see me? Or you're like, oh shit, like it obviously sees me. You know what I mean? Like there's no hiding. Like it's terrifying. It's a terrifying thought. Like, and you know, for me, it's like when I picture that at dark, this thing's just scanning and then just being like, it's on you. Like, because it would be looking around, you know, the light would be moving. And then you'd be like, hopefully it doesn't see me. And then the light just stops on you. You'd be like, it sees me. Even if you're hiding, you'd be like, well, I'm in trouble now. I may be in trouble here.
Yeah.
And you're like, what smells?
So, I mean, when you put everything together, like this thing apparently was, is it subterranean? Like maybe they did dig too deep. You know, you hit middle or the hollow earth.
Yeah. Maybe there's a little earthquake.
You had a pterodactyl.
Cracked
it. But that almost kind of like you could reason it out. You could probably make up a pretty good. This creature, say, you know, it's living in these caves, whether this is a simple like migratory thing and it's just temporary shelter, who knows? But what if this thing was originally subterranean? So this thing is flying. You imagine this thing flying through caverns and stuff like this. Would you be able to do it? You might use some type of form of echolocation or something like that. But what if what if that thing on its head is just an evolutionary thing of like it? Light, like it's a bioluminescent,
like that fish,
like an angler, like many deep sea fish that produce bioluminescence or something like that. Like maybe that's just an evolutionary trait that it's had for living underground. That it's using that to kind of scan around its surroundings and whatever. Use it to navigate and fly, through gigantic caverns that are located in the Earth's crust or, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. I think you could make a pretty good reasonable argument as that's what it is. Last thing on my list is that this thing, some type of interdimensional horror, you know, where else are you going to put it in, like a trans-dimensional portal, but inside a mineshaft? That's where you're going to find it. You know?
Yeah, it's...
This thing emerged out of some... portal from between worlds and popped out here because it does seem very unnatural that it is not, it doesn't seem that it was kind of familiar with what this is. Like it's not a kind of creature that you would find anywhere. It's got a light on its head. It's obviously if it is real, it had some very unique evolutionary pressures to make it like that.
And again, this is a mining town, and mind you, like, you know, with that, the mining was like, it was on the decline, but it's a mining town. And for them to take this seriously enough where they're like, fucking blow up the mine. Right? Like they enough people had saw this thing, these things, to then make it determined. They're like, we're no longer a mining town. blow up the mine. We're done. Right? Like, so to me, it's a really interesting case. Hashtag look up, there's great documentaries and stuff.
Yeah, it's a pretty good, there's a whole book about it, like the Van Meter Visitor. It goes kind of deeper into the history of the town and a couple other strange events.
I think we got to call it a cool name though. We got to give it like Lamp Head or something.
Yeah, it needs a good kaiju name for it than Van Meter Monster or Van Meter Visitor. It needs a real solid name, but it's kind of easier because the Van Meter one, because it seems to be just isolated. If this creature had been, you know, maybe we'll find him in old, maybe again, like the Van Meter Monster has risen to prominence just in the last couple years, probably. Maybe people will find more descriptions of a creature similar to this, and then we can give it another name, because otherwise you can just say it, well, it's just isolated to Van Meter. If you see it in some other place, then we have to give it another name. You know, imagine if the Mothman was like Point Pleasant Man or something.
Yeah.
You know? Lame. Like it's kind of lame.
The Point Pleasant Visitor.
Yeah. That's still kind of creepy, but if you were, you know, it wouldn't be Mothman. It'd be just Point Pleasant something. So.
Either way, terrifying. Terrifying account. But if you didn't know what we were talking about, hashtag look it up. There's pictures. If you watch the live stream, we got it on live stream, and we got tons more confidentials coming up for you this month. So stay tuned. Thank you for the support, and we'll keep at it.
Yep.
Dan, why don't you send us home?
And as we say at the end of these, keep it confidential.